You are listening to The Riding, NFL DFS Podcast with Pat James.
Welcome, everybody, to a turkey edition of The Riding, NFL DFS Podcast. Crazy slate. Let's get right into it. I'll save the green bean casserole takes for later on in the show. So the first thing I think that we have to discuss on a short three-game Thanksgiving slate is what type of contests are we playing in? Because obviously three games, you have to get a little bit weird, you have to get a little bit unique, you have to get a little bit crazy, but the number of entries in a contest kind of determines how weird, how unique, how crazy you should get. So, you know, if you're playing in the Millie Maker or like the $3 20 max that has hundreds of thousands of entries, obviously lineup has to be a little bit off the board. If you're playing in, you know, if like your friend sent out a 25 man private league, then you could be a little bit more chalky. Basically, I would say a general rule is it's a sliding scale, right? The more entrants, the crazier, the more unique you have to be. Because on this type of slate, it's really about also not being duped, or at least being duped as little as possible. So here are some ways that you can be a bit unique. We'll also talk about late swap in a second, but you know, your onslaughts can be a little bit crazier than normal. Normally we think of an onslaught as, you know, a quarterback, two pass catchers, one bring back, maybe two bring backs. That's getting a little crazy. On this slate, you know, if the Bills and the Saints is a 40 to 35 game, and then the other two games are like in the 30s, they're like 2013 games, you may need six or seven players from the Bills-Saints game. That's just the way it happens if one out of the three games is a shootout. So if that's the way, if that's the script you're going for, if that's what you're, if that's the quote-unquote story you're telling yourself when you're creating a lineup, it's okay to have six guys from one game. Too many times I think you try to get a piece of every pie, meaning, you know, you stack the Bills game, you bring it back with a Saints receiver, but then you have a Lions running back, a Bears running back, a Raiders receiver, the Cowboys defense. You have a piece of everything in every lineup, and that's just not the lineups that we normally tend to see win, right? We normally see onslaught lineups win, and, you know, certain games are just neglected because they don't offer the fantasy relevance that the other game or the other two games provide. So onslaughts, you know, get a ton of one game in. It's not something that's frowned upon, right? Six players from one game or anything like that is definitely doable. The other thing I see, and this comes from a main slate mentality, is, you know, you run your lineups or you fill your lineups, whether you're building by hand or you're using an optimizer, oftentimes the defense that is selected for a lineup is the one that has no offensive players that is going against that selected defense, right? So let's say it's a game where you stack the Raiders and the Cowboys. You have DeAndre Swift at running back and Devin Singletary at running back and Darnell Mooney as a wide receiver one-off. Well, you look at it and you say to yourself, or if you have the optimizer set this way, you look at it and you see that you don't have any Saints offensive players in the lineup. So automatically you click the Bills defense, who the Saints are facing. That may work, but oftentimes we see that the defense that is in the optimal lineup often is going against one or two players. I mean, think about it. The Bills get two pick sixes early on Trevor Siemian. They are 100% going to be the optimal defense on the slate. What happens for the rest of the game? The Bills are up 21-0 after they score an offensive touchdown. So what happens the rest of the game? Tre'Quan Smith, Mark Ingram, Marquez Callaway, they're all getting peppered with targets in catch-up mode. So they end up with decent fantasy days as well. as the defense they're facing. So don't, if you're using an optimizer or if you're hand building, make sure that, you know, you're not always using the defense just because there are no offensive players that they're facing in that lineup. I think it's okay to use two running backs from the same team, you know, Zeke and Pollard, Ingram and Tony Jones potentially, Devin Singletary, Matt Breida. That is a way to get unique. I wouldn't do that too much, but we've seen two running backs hit on a small slate from the same team. Two tight ends, a tight end in the flex, I guess, would be more apropos. There are a a slew of good tight ends on this slate. TJ Hawkinson, Darren Waller, Dalton Schultz, Dawson Knox. Really good options that are involved in their team's offense. So I wouldn't mind putting two. I mean, if you look at it, Dalton Schultz, who is, I think, maybe 4.6, 4.7K on DraftKings. I may have that wrong. He may be 5K. But either way, if you look at the receivers that are around him, it's comparable. You know, his workload and his average fantasy points and his expected output is comparable to those receivers. So, and it's better than any running back pretty much that is in that range. So, you know, if you're, again, if you're using optimizers, don't rule out two tight ends. And, you know, if you're building by hand, think about slotting in a second tight end in lineups to get yourself to be a little bit unique. Obviously, you can leave salary on the table. That is one way to absolutely get unique. And a lot of the times it's, you know, if you're hand building, right, you're going through, you put a stack in, you put a defense in, you hit your flex, you have one wide receiver spot left, and you have $5,200, $5,300. Well, makes a ton of sense to just click on Darnell Mooney. Sure, that makes sense in that moment with that salary constraint. However, how many people clicked through that same lineup, or how many optimizers created that same lineup? Just going down to the next Bears receiver might be Marquise Goodwin, or going down to a receiver that's maybe $500, $600, $700 less that isn't super expensive, like, super popular, like maybe a Traquan Smith or whomever it may be. Just leaving that $700 on the table gets you a little bit unique. One thing that I think is very important to do in this slate is late swap in tournaments. So let's say we're coming to the conclusion of the first game. You had, let's just say, a mini stack of David Montgomery, and you brought it back with Khalif Raymond, right? Those two guys were in your lineup. If they absolutely piss down their leg in the game and have like a combined 3 fantasy points, you have to get off of the chalk that you have in the next two games because you are severely behind the 8-ball. Conversely, if you have that stack and David Montgomery runs for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns, Khalif Raymond catches a bomb and ends up with 4 catches for 120 yards and a touchdown, and it's basically exactly what you needed to this point, well, then you can look at the rest of that lineup and get on some more chalk, right? It doesn't always mean swapping to lower-owned players. Sometimes you can get on to more chalk if the lineup is going well, right? If low-owned plays are hitting in the earlier games for you, you can get on to plays that are quote-unquote better plays, quote-unquote chalk plays, right? Because you already hit on your low-owned gems that you're going to need for this lineup to have a big payday. Because when it all boils down to it, chalk is going to be in the winning lineup. So it's okay to get onto the more optimal plays if you have low-owned darts hit early, right? It's also smart that if, you know, the Bears and Lions players absolutely fail that you have to get off of those chalky plays to hope for a min cash. All right, that's just, you know, that's just things that make sense on a short slate. And it's really, really amplified on this slate because they're playing one game at a time. So you know after each game how good each lineup is doing And if you need guys off the board to smash to get you into the cash line, or like if it's 8 o'clock rolls around and you think you basically have the nuts to that point, and you have, let's say, you know, Matt Breida sitting in the flex, because that was how you hand built it, or that was how the optimizer spit it out, right? It gave you Matt Breida in the flex. Well, if you think you have the nuts to that point, it's not a bad idea to get onto, let's say, maybe Cole Beasley. Or if there's salary remaining, to get up to Devin Singletary. Because you're not trying to hit a home run right now. You're trying to get as many points as possible to stay at the top of the leaderboard, right? There's a lot of things to go on. And I know it's hard. You know, you're in between fistfuls of stuffing to be checking lineups, especially if you create a lot of them. It's not easy to do, but it's definitely beneficial on this slate. All right, let's talk about the actual players involved. And believe me, guys, on a short slate like this, this is way more about the lineups, the construction of the lineups, how you create the lineups, more so than the actual players or what you know or how you prognosticate. It's definitely more about correlating. It's almost like a showdown slate. You know, it's more about how you correlate. And then if you can late swap and get on to some more optimal, or if you need to, suboptimal plays that can vault you into the cash line. At running back, let's see. I like Tony Pollard as a pivot from Zeke. Zeke got banged up in that last game. Who knows if he'll get a full workload on a short week. I do like DeAndre Swift in this game. He's just seeing a ton of usage. But again, Jamal Williams is going to play. Not a bad pivot. Here's where I think a great situation rests. I think the Cowboys are going to put some points on the Raiders. So I think that Kenyon Drake is going to be on the field more than we think. I think he's going to catch, you know, in if you look at some of the games that the Raiders are trailing, Kenyon Drake has like a 6 for 70 game. He does get involved a little bit more in the pass game. You know, Josh Jacobs can get there, but he has to like fall into the end zone twice. I'm just not a big Jacobs fan, so I do like Drake as a pivot there. Pay attention to who's available in that late game. That's going to be pretty huge, right? To swap into some desirable positions in that late game. We'll hear about the inactives right around the time I have my third helping of mashed rutabaga. And, you know, I've been hearing Zach Moss is going to be a healthy scratch. It looks like maybe Kamara and Ingram aren't going to play in this game. Just wild. Like Tony Jones is absolutely dirt cheap. You could slot him into different spots if you don't have him on rosters to begin with. It's just there's a lot of information that's going to hit around 6:30 that, you know, you'll need to know and you'll need to use to do some things, switch some lineups up. Probably the chalk spot though is David Montgomery against a Lions defense that allows 140 yards per game. It's going to be hard not to roster him. But those are the lineups that you're going to need to beat to pay very close attention to. If he hits, great. If he doesn't hit, that's where you're going to need to swap onto some lower owned stuff, because I have a feeling David Johnson's probably going to be 35-40% owned in most contests. And if he doesn't hit, you'll obviously need to think about, you know, slight things, you know, like coming off of Emmanuel Sanders and moving on to Marquez Callaway. Things like that where, you know, you're sacrificing a little bit of safety, but with a bit more of ceiling on some lower owned plays. So I think the most popular wide receivers on this slate, obviously the guys up top are going to be popular. Diggs, CeeDee Lamb if he plays, Michael Gallup, obviously with all the wide receivers banged up. For the Cowboys, I think you could put Cedric Wilson in that boat too. I think Darnell Mooney and Tre'Quan Smith. I think those guys are going to be popular, and I like them all. You know, I'm not saying not to play them, but here are some pivots off those guys. You know, in that 5K range, I already mentioned Marquez Callaway, and then in that 4K range, I think the Lions receivers are very interesting. Khalif Raymond gets Jared Goff back, which is good. He was targeting him when he was healthy. And also Amon-Ra St. Brown, he catches like 5 or 6, or at least has 5 or 6 targets, catches 3 or 4 balls a game. They're usually like super low A dot routes that, you know, he ends up catching like four balls for 25 yards. But if he ever gets into the end zone, he'll be a solid play there. As far as a pivot from Cedric Wilson, I think Gabe Davis is interesting. But keep in mind, your lineups have to be number one correlated and number two a mixture of chalk and some lower owned plays. But you know, when you're building lineups, you're not always thinking about that. You're not always, and sometimes the ownership isn't always what you think it is, right? Which is where the late swap comes in. Man, oh man, I didn't know Khalif Raymond was going to be 2% owned, and then he all of a sudden he goes for 20 DK points, and now you know, and now you're in business. I really like the Cowboys offense on this slate, and that's unfortunate because I think everyone is going to like the Cowboys offense on this slate. So when you do have the Cowboys in a lineup, just know that you have to probably get a little bit weird somewhere else. Probably might have to have some Lions receivers in there or some of the off-the-board Saints guys like, you know, Deontay Harris or Traquan Smith, something like that. Maybe that has to be one of your two tight end lineups or your two running back lineups, because the Cowboys are going to be popular, especially if CeeDee Lamb doesn't play. You know, like the amount of Dak, Cedric Wilson, Dalton Schultz lineups are just going to be out of this world. So if you do have that type of lineup, just make sure that things get a little different. That's probably my favorite stack. My favorite single pieces are actually on the Raiders. So that works. You know, my favorite stack and my favorite single pieces, my favorite quote-unquote one-offs are on the team or playing against the team that I want to stack. So those are easy bringbacks. Like Hunter Renfro, really like him. I think a low-owned play that may come through is DeSean Jackson. We saw them try to get him the ball in the last few games. So Raiders bringbacks, pretty important as well. I think one thing that is going to go overlooked is the ability to swap on to Tony Jones in the late game, right? So what'll happen is there aren't going to be a ton of lineups off the bat, right? Like created before the games kick off that account for Tony Jones being the only back. Some people may swap onto him later if Kamara and Ingram are both inactive, but that doesn't fully take advantage of what Tony Jones can do for your entire lineup if you have to swap off of, you know, Stephon Diggs. Or if you have to swap off of Alvin Kamara or Mark Ingram, if you had them in there hoping that they were going to be active, right? Because you're losing like 2K, 3K, 5K in terms of digs in salary. So I think it's a smart idea to create lineups hoping Tony Jones is the only active back. And then if that does occur, then you created, you used all your salary or most of your salary and have a ton of studs in there, and Tony Jones is your punt. Even though he'll probably be highly owned, you were able to jam in Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Swift, David Montgomery, CeeDee Lamb, and all these players that aren't in the other lineups that are swapping to Tony Jones, right? They're swapping to him off somebody who's more expensive. You initially had him in there, so you took advantage of all the salary relief that comes with initially rostering Tony Jones. So I think there's an advantage to presuming Tony Jones is the main back on Thursday night. Could go by the wayside. You have him in there. All of a sudden, Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara or both are active. Well, then you have to move off him maybe to Deontay Harris or something like that, or Juwan Johnson. You know, it probably makes that lineup a bit suboptimal, but having all those studs in there and then getting Tony Jones as the only back is huge, because I don't think a lot of other lineups will do that. Okay, top five Thanksgiving foods. Number one, sausage with stuffing. Number two, a well-cooked, juicy, crispy-skinned turkey. Number three, mashed potatoes, gravy. Just classic. We're doing classic stuff here on Thanksgiving. I'm not trying to eat any exotic wildebeests or any kind of crazy stuff. Number four, mashed rutabaga. If you've never had it, you very well should try it. Rutabaga is, it's kind of like a, it reminds me of a potato. That's kind of why you can mash it. It also has like a 2/3 less calories and carbs, which, you know, makes it a little bit guilt-free. If you're counting your carbs, I don't count them on Thanksgiving, but I do the rest of the year for the most part. So mashed rutabaga. And number five, for dessert, chocolate pecan pie or pecan pie, if you want to sound fancy. The one thing that will not be on my table at Thanksgiving is green bean casserole. This is a running bit of mine. In fact, if you Twitter search my handle and green bean casserole, I did it the other day, there's about 12 posts of me dogging it. It's just the worst. It's the nut low of Thanksgiving food. It's the lazy man's dish to bring. It's the lazy man's dish, extra dish to make the table look a little bit more filled with sides. I mean, you're literally opening cans of green beans, then opening cans of mushroom soup, then opening cans of fake crispy onion straws, dumping it into a dish and baking it. It sounds like an episode of Fear Factor. That's disgusting. Now, you know, some people come at me, well, I grow my own green beans and I grow my own onions. That's fine. I'm sure that tastes great. If it's all fresh ingredients, I'm sure that's delicious. But the way most people make it for Thanksgiving, you know, opening up a bunch of cans, dumping the cans in a dish, baking the dish, I want no part of it. Guys, that will do it for the Ride In NFL DFS Podcast Thanksgiving Edition 2021. I hope everybody enjoys some time with their family, enjoys some football, enjoys some food, relaxes a little bit, recharges. I will be back in a few days with the Sunday main slate breakdown. Until then, good luck in all of your DFS and betting contests.